A storm's a brewin'. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I'm Chris Steyerwalt.
And this is Perino and Steyerwalt. I'll tell you what.
Would you do that with an A apostrophe brewin' or A hyphen brewin'?
A brewin' apostrophe.
Oh, like apostrophe at the end, too.
Yes.
A brewin'.
A brewin'.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You're very street.
I'm a little street. The reason we mention that, of course, is Hurricane Florence.
As just
Flo.
People
are going to say, kiss my grits.
A reference that one quarter of you will get.
Hey, most of our audience will get it.
Do you think most of our audience watched Mel's Diner?
I don't know. No, it wasn't called Mel's Diner.
What was it called?
We're looking here as we turn to Jason Bowald.
As we turn to Jason,
and
he's
like too young. Alice.
That was a great show.
Kiss my grits.
Yeah, from
that
Flo.
Was very good. But that is a monster hurricane. Do you know our good friend Charlie Hurd? He lives down at sort of
almost
southern
to the North
Virginia.
Carolina. He's almost to the North Carolina border.
And so I sent a note to him yesterday. I said, everything okay? Are you leaving? And he said, well, he said, people there in his town. He said, and this storm is heading straight towards his town. And he said, people that live there are still talking about Hurricane Camille of 1969.
It was devastating.
And how there are places near his home where there's markers how high the water got, and that there was so much water that the river started flowing backwards.
Where he and I both went to school, which is, I don't know, an hour from there, trees were ripped asunder, walls were torn apart, the damage was real. And with a storm like this, so they're moving the track now as we're recording this, and it's going more towards the heart of South Carolina instead of North Carolina.
Oh, shoot. I didn't know that.
Yeah. but the danger with a storm like this, yes, it's at the coast. Yes, it's high winds. Yes, it's sea surge. But it's just the raw amount of water. And when you get up into the hills and you get into the mountains and you have constricted stream flows.
And they're already saturated.
Exactly.
They've had more rain. What was President Trump's tweet? The story.
We'll have to look it up for everybody.
Because you know what? He doesn't beat around the bush. He just says... I'm going to tell you very plainly.
That's a way to say it. When he was doing his sort of Weather Channel riff in the Oval Office yesterday, he described the storm as tremendously big and tremendously wet.
That's true.
You know what?
He probably heard that directly from them. I like how the FEMA office said, because they're trying to get people's attention. They want people to pay attention. They said, this storm is going to be like being hit in the face by Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And not like current Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And the good news, I think, is that, look, we can't do anything. Mother Nature is going to do what Mother Nature is going to do.
Right.
But the federal, state, and local coordination efforts, especially in those states, is really, really good.
It has been good. But the other thing to remember is things fall apart.
Yes, of course.
Things won't always work the way that they're supposed to do. And, you know, there will be people will suffer in this. And the part that I like best about Americans is that we cannot be defeated and we do not quit.
Right.
What we will get to see in terms of neighbors helping neighbors and people helping each other out, as Fred Rogers said, when times are bad, his mother used to tell him to look for the helpers. And we will get a chance to look for some great helpers, I'm sure, in the days to come.
Indeed. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because it's very important. This is the week that your book, Every Man a King, became available for purchase.
It was birthed. Yes, it was birthed.
Yes, it's about a nine-month process, actually.
It is about a nine-month process. And I have... The same feeling you must have today. We're recording this on the day that your show has both Bob Woodward and John Kerry on it. And much like when the book's coming out, everybody's like, oh, the book's coming out. Well, for me, the moment of birth was back in July.
Yeah.
That was like, so it's already done. You're just waiting for the world to see it. And that's what it's like for you with Woodward,
That's how I feel today. I did feel a little bit this weekend like I was studying for finals.
Yeah.
Because those are two big books, important books, lots of news around them. They're doing interviews. And because it's television, you have a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
But very exciting, too. Tell them about the podcast series you did for Every Man a King. Because if you're listening to this podcast, you should definitely listen to those podcasts.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Dana.
Oh, okay, fine.
My first question is, when are we going to do the book club? because that will
impinge
upon how I respond to this.
Well, I think, didn't we say, let's do the book club the first week of October.
First week of October.
Okay, so everybody that listens, you're in our book club. You're already a member.
Your due date is October 3rd.
So listen to Every Man a King. You're going to send us some questions. You know what we need, Jason? We need like a Gmail address or a Fox News address. Do we have a Fox News email address? We could create one. See, that's, do you see how? And a hashtag.
Oh, a hashtag.
Oh, I'll definitely
hashtag.
Take a hashtag.
Take a hashtag.
Always say yes to the hashtag.
Say yes to the hashtag. Well, by the time we get to the book club, we will have had out, and we are releasing these in tranches. The first one came out already. Jason and Devin here and Brianna McClellan, who works with me on the Halftime Report, we worked on these. The first one was with Richard Brookhiser. It's about Andrew Jackson. And I find a smart human to talk about each of these folks. So you'll get Brookhiser on Jackson, Carl Rove on William Jennings Bryan.
Did Carl love it?
We're doing it. We're about to do it. And we're so excited about it because it's perfect for him because
perfect.
We're talking about the opposite of William McKinley. We're talking about McKinley's rival.
Oh, I can't wait to listen to that.
And we've got Amity Schles, Jonah Goldberg, Trey Gowdy, a wonderful cat. Oh, Tucker Carlson talking about Ross Perot.
Oh, that's going to be great.
It was great. I already did that one. It was really interesting because he covered Perot's campaign for the Weekly Standard.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. All that
stuff
is great.
Boy, Tucker Carlson is a good writer.
His television show, what I'm sure it's great for him, and I know his fans love it, but the fact that we do not get to read him
as much as we used to. I know.
What a great writer he was.
I told Hamda, you know, the new assistant, that she needed to go back and read some of his magazine writing.
Amazing.
It is so good.
And I have one other thing that I want to tell
you. Actually, he wrote a really good, interesting piece. If people are still interested in learning about John McCain, and they should be.
That was, yep.
His piece about being on the campaign trail with John McCain is exquisite.
And prescient. Mm-hmm. He picked up on the threads that were coming apart in American politics in 2008 and all of that stuff.
Wait, why are we praising Tucker Carlson so much? This is your week, your podcast, your book. So tell me what it's like when you're out there talking about your own book. Is that hard?
Well, you know,
you're not a braggart.
Well, but the good news is the book's not about me. It's about America.
That's true.
So I like talking about America. Talking about America is easy for me. And the other thing is this is popcorn history. It's accessible stuff. I didn't write. This is not I am not Jonah Goldberg, Suicide of the West. This is not a scholarly treatise. This is accessible. So whether you are if you are a history buff, you can read it and say, yeah, I knew that, but it's like I'm writing columns about history. If you're not a history buff, it should be accessible and it should be a way to learn about something that I guess I was doing the Daily Signal podcast for the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, neat. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. With Rob Louie.
He did the interview.
Yep.
Rob's a great guy.
He and his co-host, whose name escapes me right now, I'm very sorry.
Katrina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Katrina Trinko. No?
Maybe, no, not. But anyway, whoever you are, I'm very sorry I forgot
Katrina,
your name.
You are awesome, too.
Yes, stipulated. But they were both so laudatory of you and talked about how much they like this podcast and all those things. But the good question was, all right, what's the message here? What's the takeaway? And I said, be of good cheer. Be optimistic, America. We've been here before. We've been in worse places than this before.
Yeah.
We are always in a condition of either coming together or falling apart. And sometimes it's hard to tell one from the other. But we will come together, and it does work, and the cycle will continue, and America will be America.
How are you handling the schedule of the book tour?
Well, you had good advice for me.
Take it one day at a time?
Just don't think about the whole—
Don't look too far ahead.
Don't look down the rest of the itinerary. Mm-hmm. What time do I need to be up? Mm-hmm. How can I eat food and not eat the wrong food and be where I need to be at the right time? And I have, by the way, a challenge for you today in my travels.
Oh, you're picking up something out of your pocket?
So I have the challenge, which are
Nordic sweets.
Nordic sweets.
Salty licorice fish?
Salty licorice fish.
Oh, man, I'd eat that whole bag.
So I was in the greatest candy store I think that I have ever been in.
That's very expensive candy.
It's $10.50.
Where is this magical place?
The Sugar Shack in Rosemary Beach, Florida. And they have everything. They had candy cigarettes. They had the
boys. Oh, candy cigarettes are the best.
The boys got every, like, I cleaned them out. Mm-hmm. But for you.
For me, these are mine.
These are yours. And for you.
I'm going to take a picture and I'm putting it on the internet.
Because that's the real stuff.
Jasper loves fish too, but I'm not going to give him any of
these. I don't think he wants salted licorice.
The thing about the book tours that is hard is that you feel like you're repeating yourself over and over, but the thing you have to remember is that each audience is new.
Right.
So you get tired of hearing your own voice, but you're right. You're talking about America. People who write autobiographies are like talking about themselves.
Well, and the other thing is, everybody who's having you on, I don't mean to be, this is not embittering in any way. Everybody who's having you on doesn't really want to talk about the book. This is an excuse for them to have somebody on that they might, for example, John Kerry is coming on your show to talk about his book.
Right.
But you'd like to have John Kerry on your show to talk about the news of the day.
Yes.
To talk about the things that he did.
The
to talk
good
about
news
his
about this is that in his book, he writes about a right. lot of things that are news of the day. Syria.
Yep.
Chemical weapons.
Yep.
Hello. It's about to happen again. Iran. And the Iran nuke deal, you know, President Trump and Nikki Haley announced that there's going to be an entire day of the UN General Assembly dedicated to Iran and North Korea and non-proliferation issues. And he talks about running for president.
Right.
And the messaging. And I am so curious. I don't think I have time. But I do want to ask him if the 2004 Kerry Edwards platform is one that could still be used today in like a 2020 election.
Nope.
I think he would say no.
Nope.
Well, that'll be interesting. But I do want to say you get to do all other things. The great thing about putting out a book now is that there's a lot of other places to do interviews and podcasts.
Yeah.
And you're going to do the Super Mexican podcast?
I believe that is so.
They adore you.
Oh, good.
They
I
talk
don't have
about
any fish
you
for them.
Every week.
I have no fish for them.
Okay, well, they don't need fish. They want tacos.
Okay. Well, I like tacos.
Did you see that thing I sent you that Jonah Goldberg tweeted?
You say what it is.
Well, you explain it.
So there's been a story going around, a clickbait of the clickbaitiest clickbait, which is Taco Bell voted America. Americans agree Taco Bell, the best Mexican restaurant. And, of course, this is used by people to say – how dumb Americans are and how tacky and, oh, my gosh, can you believe – look at what a bunch of Philistines to say that that's true. And Jonah said, quite rightly, Jonah, who we need more reviews than Jonah, we should point out, to defeat his inferior podcast, The Remnant. But Jonah pointed out, if you ever need an example about how name identification works in public polling, here you have it. Taco Bell is not – Americans do not think – how can I put it correctly?
The best Mexican food you've ever had in your life is not at Taco Bell.
Well, you don't – I mean, 2 o'clock in the morning, Taco Bell has done some very – a Big Beef Mexi Melt has done some pretty special things. But the point being, Taco Bell is the best known.
Right.
The best known. So as a consequence
– You win the poll,
right,
but you don't necessarily win the election?
Right. Exactly. Because it's just name identification. If you ask 1,000 people, what's the best Mexican restaurant? And you're going to say La Lomita Dos.
La Lomita Dos.
La Lomita Dos.
3rd and Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. Still number one. This is Washington, D.C.,
yep.
Folks. Washington, D.C., La Lomita Dos.
La Lomita Dos.
I love those guys. We ate there 3 times a week.
And it is delicious, and you're going to say that. And I'm going to say La Carreta in Kanawha City, West Virginia, with El Sinaloense, which I still dream of.
I would also say Casa Bonita. Have you ever been there?
Yeah. Well, I've seen the South Park episode about it.
Oh, I forgot South Park did an episode about it.
Yeah. Casa Bonita, awesome.
There's a few friends who listen to this podcast who went to Casa Bonita with me. My mom also listens. My sister. I wonder if I got to ask my dad if he listens. Man, if we got to go to Casa Bonita, that was big time.
Waterfall.
That was a big night out.
It's like you're at the fake Mayan ruins and you raise the flag on your table to get more of the stuff.
This is like – it was like the anti-Atkins diet.
Yeah. Just carbs and sugar shot directly into you. But Taco Bell – so if we have 1,000 people – we have 2 people in this room, and now we have 50% of the respondents say that La Lomita Dos, and 50% of the respondents say La Carreta. And now if we bring Jason in and he says – what would Jason say? Does Jason have a favorite Mexican restaurant? Maria's in Ronkonkoma.
I might go visit you.
I will definitely check
out. Is
that
good?
So now we've got a third, and a third. My point being, if we spread this out to 1,000 people, Taco Bell being the best-known Mexican restaurant in the United States, out of 1,000 people, it is more likely that more of them will say Taco Bell than any other just simply because it is the best-known, or simply because they live in a town where the only Mexican restaurant is a Taco Bell, or
just because they're kids.
Net effect is when you do a poll, and we saw this perfectly in Florida in the Republican gubernatorial primary, Ron DeSantis versus Adam Putnam. Adam Putnam has been in Florida politics since the days of Croesus. And Ron DeSantis is new. And Ron DeSantis is a congressman who's never been elected statewide. You poll a bunch of Republicans, Putnam's up. Then guess what happens? Ron DeSantis gets famous. He does a statewide debate. He campaigns. Donald Trump endorses him. Mm-hmm. His name ID shoots up among.
And he did a ton of Fox News interviews.
Constant. And in the end, what looked like a lead for Adam Putnam was in fact just an advantage, not just, but substantially an advantage in name identification. So it's the Jeb Bush phenomenon. Jeb Bush shoots at the top of the polls. What do you know about Scott Walker? I don't know that guy. What do you know about Jeb Bush? Oh, I know that guy.
I know that guy.
I know that guy.
Right. Is Ted Cruz really in trouble in Texas?
Ted Cruz is in as much trouble in Texas as Bob Menendez is in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
So, look, uh-huh. let's be real. For Republicans, there's a scenario where they lose the Senate. That's a possible. It's also possible that they would gain two seats.
Right.
It's possible. I think probably the closest.
We have a cone of indecision. What it's called in the weather forecast.
Right. And we distribute probability over a bell curve. And out at the corners of probability for the Senate, one side is Democrats take the Senate. And just as likely is that Republicans gain a couple seats. There in the middle, it looks like about a wash. It looks like the Republicans lose a couple, Democrats lose a couple, maybe it's R plus one, but Republicans can afford to lose one seat and still maintain control. So could Ted Cruz lose? Yes. Do I think Ted Cruz will lose? No. We have it rated as a lean Republican. The Beto O'Rourke phenomenon is real.
You could bet that there's a lot of disgruntled people thinking that the NRSC is going to have to spend time and resources in Texas. That should be easy for the Republicans. But maybe things are changing. I don't know.
Well, things are changing, number one. But number two, there's bad blood against Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
There's still bad blood against Cruz.
Is it because he wasn't for Trump initially?
That's how he did it.
Oh.
At first, he was playing the game.
Yeah.
I love Trump. So Cruz gave away a lot of the admiration that he had from conservatives because of the cynical way that he played the Trump thing. I think Donald's terrific. He would say, and he wanted Trump to stay in the race so that he would hurt others, and Cruz figured that he would, like a remora, swim along with the shark until the right time and then pounce. And it was a disaster for Cruz and for the other candidates, and that earned him some enmity. But then he goes to the convention, vote your conscience, he says, boo. Mm-hmm. And the day, if you remember the breakfast he had with the Texas delegation the next day, where it was like they were angry at him.
Mm-hmm.
Because by then, the party had coalesced substantially behind Trump. By the time of the convention, Trump was pushing 80% support among Republicans. And they were coalescing. They were angry at Cruz. And I would say this. You don't want to appear to be too calculating as a politician. You have to have some – people have to feel like saying.
Got to get real, real.
You got to get real, real.
But Trump says he's going to go do a rally in Texas in the biggest stadium they have.
Biggest stadium they have.
That's going to be crazy. Like, I kind of want to go to that.
I mean, that – well, I stay out of the press pool is all I would say.
Yeah, no, I will stay out of the press pool.
If you go wear dark sunglasses and a hat because of course I, you know my position. I don't think that reporters should go inside
right.
those venues.
Right. There's
anymore.
No need to anyway.
Put a camera, put a robo control
yeah,
camera in there.
That's get true. The report, you can still cover it.
And don't be a prop. Don't be in there just so they
true.
Can do that.
That's a good idea.
Jim Acosta.
I wanted to add one thing. I've been texting here, which is a little rude, but I wanted to ask my Aunt Patty Sue Schuler.
Hi, Patty Sue.
Aunt Patty Sue. You know, she is in Rawlins, Wyoming.
Okay.
And I asked her, what's the name of that fantastic Mexican restaurant?
Okay.
And it is Rose's Lariat.
Rose's Lariat, not Lariat?
Lariat. But, I mean, it's Mexican.
Do you want to say it Mexican-y?
Yeah.
Not Lariat? You want to say Lariat?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
All right.
Well, it is. Let me tell you.
Is it good?
Yeah.
You know what I...
If you are going through Rawlins, Wyoming, you got to stop there.
How is the queso?
Oh, you know, I don't think I ever had the queso there. Boy, it's been many, many years since I've been there, but that's how good it is. I still remember. And my Aunt Patty Sue, she's the best.
Do you like chorizo in your queso?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
I'll take a little bit of that. By the way, I had a big weekend. I took Jason Bonewall there to the Dierks Bentley concert.
Oh, yeah. And his mama.
It was his first concert at Madison Square Garden. Dierks' first concert at Madison Square Garden. Sold out show. Jason, just tell the people how great the show was. Is that on air? You got to put that on air.
We
want to make you a part of this.
We're going to have to start a movement.
This is what we're trying to do.
We're going to have to start a movement.
Oh, like
he's like, nah, bro.
He's like Gelman.
Nah, bro.
Remember Gelman?
Yeah. I like how you're really focusing on the late 80s references today.
Okay, we went to Hamilton.
Yeah.
At the strong recommendation of Tony Fratto and Charlie Hurt. They said, you must go. We finally went, and now I get it. And I was blown away.
And if you can
so clever.
If you can find some cultural entity that both Tony Fratto and Charlie Hurt agree upon, you have struck gold.
America loves that show, Hamilton. That was just fantastic.
Yes.
I'd go again. Do you want to talk about the latest polls? I do.
Yes.
Quinnipiac and NPR have just come out with their
NPR
congressional
has
ballot.
We've had recent polls, USA Today. We've had an Investor's Business Daily poll. We've had Monmouth has polled everybody. And we're going to have, by the way, the Fox News Channel will have some state-specific polls out this evening on specific battleground races that you can see in the 6 o'clock hour for the very first time on Special Report with Brett Baer.
On which show?
At 6 o'clock p.m.
Okay, but why not on 2 o'clock?
It's how we've always done it.
Oh, the polls.
The polls.
I get the ratings changes.
You get the ratings changes.
Okay, fine. Fine.
Oh, no. You get whenever this network changes the race rating in the power rankings.
We do that at 2 o'clock.
You get that.
Okay, fine.
But when the new polls come out, they have
that's 6 o'clock.
Since the days of Brit Hume, that's a 6 p.m. property. But we'll have polls out. And here's what the polls say. The polls say that Americans are grossed out by Donald Trump and they don't like him.
Not all, but...
No, but he's number...
But the majority, yeah.
Yeah, his numbers are now... So the Quinnipiac, everybody who has listened to this podcast for any length of time knows that other than our poll, Quinnipiac is really one of my favorites.
Yes.
And it's one of my favorites not only because they do good methodology and they do good polls, but also the transparency of their crosstabs. You can dig down. They make it all... They post it all, and you can really dig down and see the numbers. And what's interesting is this... Or a lot is interesting, but one of the things that's interesting, there is only now one demographic subgroup that has majority approval for Donald Trump, and it is white voters without college degrees.
Okay.
Now, this is not surprising because the president has arranged his candidacy and presidency around the interests of these voters.
Could it also be that the economy and where some new jobs are being created are in the places where you might have white, no college voters.
The increase, we have seen the greatest increase in manufacturing jobs that we have seen in, I forget what the statistic is, but it's a long time.
And small business optimism is at an all-time high. And then did you see that other report today? Incomes rising for the middle class and poverty is down below pre-recession levels. So,
but we are also starting to see in farm country and in rural America
that the tariffs are having an
impact. It's starting to.
So how is that going to play out?
So what's happening now? And I have it here.
Because I want to mention, you know, I met a guy this week who runs a station in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, yeah?
And he plays our podcast every Sunday. And I said, oh, Sunday night? And he said, no, at noon. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I better mind my P's and Q's.
Yeah, seriously. People are driving home
and
from church.
And he said, yeah, that'd be good.
Driving home from church to Little Miss Dana Perino getting bleeped.
Yeah.
Yep. I see how it goes.
Yeah. So, folks in Lincoln, Nebraska, tell us what your favorite Mexican restaurant is so that next time we're there, we can go to visit. But
and we will try to
thank
keep
you for watching in Lincoln, Nebraska.
And we will try to keep the Sabbath holier.
Where are the tariffs having the most impact? Is it like Missouri?
Well, Iowa. And, you know, there are a couple of house races in Iowa where it could have a consequence. I think this. When you look at why – who's sticking with Trump and why, they're the same people who were with him. You know, we've talked about the floor – where Trump's floor is and where his ceiling is. His ceiling's at like 45%. Mm-hmm. His floor can get down low. He can get down to that 30%. Those aren't economic voters necessarily. Those are culture warriors. Those are people who
– I heard Josh Kroshar say that presidential elections are usually about the economy, and midterms are often about, or that when the, I'm sorry, that when the economy is good,
right,
that your midterm election becomes about character.
I think
Amy Walter is the one who said presidential elections are based mostly on the economy, midterm elections are based mostly on the president.
I think we have been in an era of change about what these midterms are. Mm. And I think that we are in an era now where the midterms drive the next presidential in this in this sense, which is the Tea Party rebellion, the 2010 Republican wave changes the composition of the Republican Party, changes the priorities of the Republican Party, affects the 2012 nominating cycle. In the era of hyper-national, the biggest change in American politics – in my lifetime, is living in a fully nationalized polity. Every election, they're not local elections. Every election is a national election. The degree to which we are sorted out now to the point, and this is because of national media, this is because of the internet, this is because of the demise of local news, this is because mm-hmm. of people move a lot, this is because of a lot of things. But it used to – people, there was no cognitive dissonance before about saying, yes, I vote for this Democratic congressman, but I also did vote for Ronald Reagan. So what? Mm-hmm.
Like Mike Kaufman's race out in Colorado.
Exactly.
Peter Ducey had a good report on that yesterday.
It was very good.
So interesting, too, because Peter Ducey and he quoted Mike Kaufman saying that this race could really come down to how the Ethiopian community in Denver or in his district decides to vote.
Right.
That's how you can narrow it down.
You can get it, and it's the swing district. So in this era, you have all this energy for Democrats, and you have the Democratic Socialists, and you have all of that stuff surging in. How will that affect 2020? How will that affect who their nominee is and all that? Those are all interesting questions. When we get down to it, though, for who's going to control the House and who and what is the balance of power going to be in the Senate, when you get right down to it, when you have a president – whose job approval numbers are dipping into the 30s, whatever it is, right, whatever the cause is, in the case of Donald Trump, it is character, mm-hmm. right? In 2010, it wasn't about Barack Obama's character. It was about Obamacare.
Right.
People were frustrated with Obamacare. They were frustrated with cap and trade, and they were frustrated with the president's response to how to deal with the ongoing recession. In 2014, it was about the same notions, and the midterm electorate is a third smaller than the general electorate. A third fewer people vote in midterms than in general, roughly. Those voters are more engaged, they pay more attention, they are participants. They get the attendance award. These voters are paying attention to stuff. They're read in. I hate uninformed voters voting. People say voting is a virtue. No, voting is this wonderful privilege that we have in our republic. And if you don't know what you're talking about, don't vote. I don't need your vote. If you're making up your mind on the basis of, oh, I liked his knot, I like his necktie, I'm voting for him. If you're doing that, please stay home. We can do without you. Mm-hmm. The midterm electorate is knowledgeable and engaged because you're not going to go vote unless you really know what's going on.
I wanted to ask you if you think, I have so many questions, we're going to run out of time. I didn't even do a mailbag because.
I did the mailbag.
Oh, you did? Okay, we'll have to speed things up here.
All right.
I'll do a lightning round then. Do you think President Obama getting out on the campaign trail was a departure from presidential norms?
Yes.
Do you think that's good or bad?
Bad.
Do you think he will have an impact, good or bad, for Democrats in the midterms?
Good.
In those districts like in California, New Jersey?
I mean, good in the sense that he'll raise money. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush on the campaign trail this week doing what ex-presidents traditionally do, which is behind closed doors, raising money, mm-hmm. and talking to the loyal of the loyal.
Yeah, and also the other thing President Bush does, which I love, and maybe other presidents do this too, but he always will try to figure out a way to talk to the campaign staff.
Yeah.
Like do a conference call. I remember he did that for Ed Gillespie in Virginia, and the staff was so excited and energized.
Nice.
After that. Brett Kavanaugh hearings, Cory Booker and Kamala Harris. What do you think?
Cory Booker.
Spartacus.
I can't say he's a joke, but this is why stunts like that. I'm going to release the documents. They were already released. Well, I will go
Did
to
you
prison.
Hear the great thing that, what? I thought it was a great joke, and then I repeated it on The Five, so excuse me, people out there, if you've already heard this. But I saw this thing on Twitter that this is Cory Booker at Olive Garden. I'm going to pay for the breadsticks. Like, sir, the breadsticks are free. I'm still going to pay
still
for,
paying
the
for the breadsticks. I like that. And the soup, too.
So his was kind of a joke. Kamala Harris's was actually quite devious. Because when she edited that video to exclude key words from Brett Kavanaugh's sentence,
the words
to try
in which
to
he
rally
said,
up.
This is what others have argued.
Yeah, they said.
Right.
And then she tried to cover it up by releasing the full video and saying, but it still stands. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
I thought that was quite unbelievable.
I'm telling people, don't sleep on Kamala Harris.
Right.
That's
what Gutfeld said. He said, she's not afraid to just be shameless and be dirty.
Trump.
Right.
MAGA. Mm. And remember, we talk about this a lot, but this is really important. When we come to believe, like Joe Scarborough, and Trump is worse than terrorists.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. When we come to believe that our political rivals are really enemies and that they really are evil and they really hate the country and want to hurt it, when we come to believe that, we can excuse any behavior in our own team. Because if you're fighting evil, right, if you're doing it to beat – it's like the Nazis. Well, these are Nazis. Well, if you call them Nazis, what wouldn't you do? Do you remember the stupid?
Would you have killed Hitler as a baby?
Kill baby Hitler. Would you kill baby Hitler? The stupid question, but it taps into where we are. Where's Hitler? He's not here, okay?
Right, not here, guys.
He's not here, guys.
Okay, another question. Do you care who the New York Times anonymous op-ed writer was?
I'd love to know.
Do you think we'll ever know?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask Woodward.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's it. Mailbag.
Okay. Mailbag. Rustle up the mailbag. Let's see what they said out there. I hope they like licorice fish. A lot of people hate black licorice, to be fair.
I know. Sean Desmond, when I wrote my book, I turned in the first draft, and I had written something about how I love black licorice, and we used to pick it up at Johnson's Corner, which was a little diner on the way up to Wyoming to visit the grandparents. And he wrote in the margin, "You are weird."
Well, I'll tell you what, Sean. These are the real deal.
Do you like black licorice?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you buy some for yourself?
No.
Because this was $10.
I used to hate it. My father loved it, and he would eat all the black juji fruits at the movie theater.
Yeah.
But now I love stinky stuff like black licorice and blue cheese and my stinky taste buds. Jason Shout, is Dana taking bribes for her replacement for the podcast next week?
No, but we already have a replacement.
Say who it is.
Josh Krosharv of National Journal. Hotline Josh.
There you go.
He's a longtime podcast listener.
Longtime listener, first time caller.
And he also participated when we did the temporary fake TV show.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what TV show.
And is smart. And
it's perfect because it's kind of right up to the midterms. I thought you would really enjoy that.
And I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. I already know what I'm going to do with Josh.
Oh.
Is we're going to run through, we're going to go race by race by, we're going to like break them down. We're going to go through key races.
That's so fun. So that's in 2 weeks.
Yep, in 2 weeks. I'm going to pick a raft of races.
Okay.
Michael LaCroix just adopted a Vizsla, mm-hmm. or just obtained. They have a puppy.
A little puppy. Okay.
It's very adorable that you will see. And his name is Bucky.
Cute.
And he wanted you to know that their breeder had a copy of your book
table. That's great. Well, good luck to you with the puppy. Sometimes people get a Vizsla and they say that they are mad at me. Jasper got in trouble the other night. Oh.
What did he do?
You know, the separation anxiety thing is real.
Yeah, yeah,
we solved the problem. The key is you have to take him down right before you're going to leave him, let him have a wee, and then bring him back up to the apartment, and then you can leave.
Right.
So the other night, Peter took Jasper down with him to say goodbye to Barry, who also now listens to the podcast, as he was headed back to Scotland, goes back upstairs, and then an hour and a half, 15 minutes later, leaves to go run an errand, and then comes right back. Well, in that time, Jasper weed on the carpet in the hallway. And I was on the phone with a source for the Woodward interview, and I hear this, Jasper, get over here right now. And I was like, oh, boy. It's like, and Jasper wouldn't come. So he grabs a hold of him, mm-hmm. his collar, and Jasper's like, and like doing the resist thing. Jasper could have grown
hashtag
up in the
resist.
60s resistance. He goes boneless, and you cannot move him. So I see Peter think, you know, he's a fit guy. Picks up Jasper by the rear end and
Jasper's not
and
a small
takes
dog.
Him over, shows him. Now, he's 6.5 years old. This
right.
dog, it's not going to stop. And then he puts him in the bedroom. Now, I'd be mad at him, too, and it's frustrating because you got to get the carpet cleaned. But I said, you have to take him down right before. And Peter said, I did, but an hour and 15 minutes is what it is, plus it was raining. Anyway, we go in 25 minutes later.
Oh, no.
I said, can we take him out of Jasper jail now? He says, yes. So we go in together, like, Jasper, why did you do that? And then we went to hug him, and he was shaking like a leaf. It was so sad.
He was.
And then we started
on.
Kissing him, and now Peter said that's why he's going to pee again, because he pays no consequence. But it's actually our fault, because we didn't train him on that part well.
On.
He does everything else he does perfectly. It's just if you leave him, he gets scared. Mad, whatever.
Jamie Gray, I'm in Indiana, middle right voter. I want to flip Indiana Senate seat, but something about Braun rubs me the wrong way. What are you hearing about him from voters?
I am not hearing anything
Nothing.
About Braun from voters. Maybe that's a problem.
Well, I think...
Well, I mean, he's probably just focused on Indiana.
Well, no, I think perhaps quite intentionally, mm-hmm. the strategy is to be a hole in the water. Who am I? I am a guy named Mike Braun who is a Republican. Okay, good. Donald Trump, Mike Pence, like me, we will have a rally, run some TV ads, say Joe Donnelly's a Democrat, because the partisan spread, so Indiana is a somewhat elastic state. It will swing a little bit, but it ain't that elastic to be able to maintain having a state that went for, you know, 25 points or whatever to maintain a Democratic congressman. So maybe Braun's strategy is just to be quiet. And let the electorate revert to norm. I don't know.
Do you know one of the best things about Indiana this year?
Popcorn?
October 20th, the Garth Brooks concert at Notre Dame Stadium.
That's got everything I don't like. That's like a baklava of terribleness.
Oh, no. That is all like pure Americana. The worst kind of – Garth Brooks is the worst kind of country.
No, well, who's the worst? The very
– Don't say it.
Okay, I'm not going to say that. What's his name? The guy who with the tank tops.
Kenny Chesney?
Kenny Chesney. That's actually the nadir.
Wow,
that's
even actually, Jason is like, no, but Kenny Chesney has a good song, Get Along. Do you like that song?
I'm sure he has good songs. I'm sure, and Garth Brooks has good songs. I'm saying that style of...
They're totally different. I mean, you can't compare Garth Brooks and Kenny Chesney in the same...
Can't you?
No.
Can't you?
No, you cannot.
Can't? You
no.
can't?
America,
do you remember when Garth Brooks had an alter ego?
Yeah.
Remember Chris Gaines?
Yeah.
And he had an alter ego, yeah. And it was like
he was like John Barron.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Right.
But I was going to say he was like Donnie and Marie in one person. He's a little bit country. He's a little
okay,
bit rock and roll.
Okay, last question from
and
you
Notre Dame
and before
stinks.
Trivia.
Yes, go ahead.
No, one more.
Oh, one more.
Do you want one more?
Well, I would just say that Notre Dame football, boo. Okay.
Well, you're going to get a lot of hate for that because my neighbor came over down in Jersey and he said, can you put this hat on, please, and take a picture and put it on Instagram? So I did. And he says, right, go blue. So I did.
Oh,
and
Dana
that was from
Perino.
Michigan. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm like, sure. Happy to help you out. And the Notre Dame people freaked out.
And the whole state of Ohio.
Yeah, Ohio was mad.
And Michigan State. My sister went to
everybody was mad at me.
Went to Michigan State. And yeah, so yeah. All I can say is, as a West Virginia fan, boo, boo, Fighting Irish. All right, last question. Kristen Bush, has Dana ever been to a college football game, and did she love it?
Yes, I've been to a college football game.
Oh, yeah?
I went to a CU Boulder game years ago. I mean, like a really long time ago. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't. I was invited to go to a Clemson game, but then there was a major storm, and I couldn't get there.
I am really hoping that 2018 will conspire to get you where you should have been all along.
In West Virginia?
Mountaineer Field, Milan Pushkar Stadium, Morgantown, West Virginia.
I would love to go.
Greatest place
I like Morgantown.
Earth. Yeah.
All right, your trivia today. Number one, this man was both the first governor of Florida and the first man elected to the U.S. Senate from Tennessee.
Andrew Jackson.
That was so easy, Jason. Jeez.
Well, he's given me book stuff.
Number two, who is the most recent third-party candidate to carry at least one state in a presidential election?
George Wallace.
Okay.
He's helping with the book. He's trying to sell the book.
That's pretty nice of you,
the
Jason.
Children.
But really, you could have made it a little harder. Like, maybe have Chris try just a tiny bit.
I have a problem, Dana.
Hmm.
The man children are quite bright.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a serious danger that they will both get into really good schools.
Okay.
And this is striking me now as the eldest, and to whom I dedicated the book to them, that the eldest is in the upper school at his school now,
mm-hmm.
and he is wearing men's shoes. College is like there. Jason is trying to help me sell books, I'm for him.
Well, I do hope everyone buys a book. The other thing is, if you don't have time to read a book, but if you have a commute, I'm telling you the audiobook is super special. So I really recommend the audiobook as well.
Thank you.
All right. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And please leave us a review because we're in a competition. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.